Hi there, Dojo Disciples. Sean Orange here to read off the next winner of our survey drawing. And it's Dan. Congratulations, Dan. Please send us your address and we'll send you your DVD as soon as we can, hopefully before Christmas. Won't that be a treat? Also, be sure to check out the second annual Powit.TV Awards over at Powit.TV, of course. I'm sure we'll also link it to our show notes. We were nominated for a couple of categories, so find out if we won anything. All right, that's enough preamble. On with the podcast.
So my sister was recommending a book to me.
Okay.
Gosh, I don't remember what it was. I think it was something sci-fi-y.
I don't remember books.
Well, I don't. No. I didn't borrow it. She was just recommending it, so I don't remember the title.
Oh, okay.
But you know, I like book recommendations. I really like book recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually, you know, if my brother recommends a book to me. Or something like that, or one of my friends, you know, I'm like, oh, when you're finished with it, you know, let me borrow it.
Yeah. Right.
And, I mean, that's the way things go. I love that. I don't have to buy that many books, although I do. I buy a lot of books that I don't read. But,
I know.
But I think that goes along with our podcast on games I don't play, so.
Oh, I suppose. Yeah, I tend to take that pile of shame.
Yeah. This pile of shame has many things in it, books and there's even a couple DVDs in there, and that represents that's a sadness there, because it doesn't take that long to watch like a movie.
No, compared to reading a book, for sure.
Or playing a game, yeah.
Yeah, especially like I've been blowing through the Harry Potter series, and I'm almost done with the seventh and final book. I actually borrowed three of them from a friend of mine and bought the rest, so I'm sure I could get the others eventually, but that's an expensive proposition to get seven books.
It is, and so... Here's my new problem, I guess, is that both my brother and my sister are now buying books through Kindle.
Wow, yeah.
Now I think it's great. Like, you know, my sister lives in Japan as well, different area. She lives much closer to Tokyo, as you know, because you stayed there.
Yep.
But since she got a Kindle, she hasn't been buying any paper books anymore.
At all?
She's no, not at all.
Wow.
She's buying everything through Amazon, and it's great for her. You know, you know, she's planning to move back to America next year, so you know she can't take a whole suitcase full of books. You know, travel weight and stuff. But you know, everything she's downloaded on her Kindle, she's got forever.
Wow.
But that's where it ends. It ends with her.
Oh, I see. Yeah, she can't really lend it out unless she gives someone her Kindle.
Exactly. And she's not going to do that because all of her books are on her Kindle.
It's like
so,
it's like if you wanted to lend a book to someone and had to like lend them your entire library.
Well, exactly. Exactly, and that's crazy. And the other thing, of course, is even if I had a Kindle, you know, you can't do electronic loans, at least not at this point.
Right.
So, I don't know. For me, I think the better value is owning a real book.
Sure. I would think so.
And I used to love going to used bookstores, too, to find, you know, because, you know, new books can be fairly expensive, but, you know, you go to like a paperback exchange or something, you get, you know, you pick up a bunch of books for a dollar a book.
Yeah, those Harry Potter books are running upwards of like $35 a piece or so, and multiply that by seven.
Yeah.
And the dead trees. You can't forget the dead trees.
And I don't know. I think there's just something about loaning someone a book that you finished too, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of a personal thing too, because, you know, it's a story you've read for a number of hours and you feel confident enough to tell another person to devote that much time of their life to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could always just say, hey, you should really download this to your Kindle, but it's different. There's a feeling. And I feel the same way about DVDs and stuff, too.
Oh, yeah.
And, well, I guess games is just as important, because I think I wouldn't have played nearly as many games as I did in my childhood if it hadn't been for borrowing them from my friends.
Right, right. Oh, man. Do I have stories to tell you about that?
Go for it.
We keep coming back to Zelda 2 because it's one of my most often played games in my youth. But I lent it to a friend of mine and, well, a friend of mine and his brother.
Yeah.
And his brother played it and erased all my save files.
Oh.
And I was like, why did you do that? There were open spots. It's like, well, you know, when you lend someone something, I mean, they can do whatever they want with it. And I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure that's not what that means. And I never lent them anything again.
That does definitely not mean that.
So, you know, I was like, what, 8 or 9 at the time? So that was pretty upsetting. You know, yeah. So I don't really tend to lend out my stuff anyway because of these terrible experiences. Although Mike, I think you know Mike, he lent me Persona 4, which I still have not played and was actually mentioned in conjunction with our last podcast about the last good JRPG I played. Well, it should have been Persona 4. I just haven't bothered to put it in my PS2 yet.
I have both Persona 4 and the Persona 3, like, limited edition box thing. Actually, my Persona 4 is the limited edition as well. I haven't opened either of those.
Oh, dear.
Well, it's because I hear that they're so... You see, these games were talked up to me too much.
Okay.
They're like, these games, they'll change your life. Best games ever. Wonderful, wonderful games. Super, super great. And they're like, but they're really addictive and they take, like, 60 hours to beat. And I'm like... Oh no! You know what I'm looking for on the box of a game right now is really good game, super fun. You can beat it in 5 hours. Now that's what I'm looking for. I know that's anti what we should be thinking about in games, but like I don't have time to level up characters anymore, and I don't have time to explore, find out what every villager in the town is talking about,
Right.
I want like the best parts of a game in like a manageable dose.
You want the greatest hits. You want games from the early 80s.
No. Because I want Reader's Digest versions of good games.
Okay.
But to tell you the truth, I wouldn't be happy with that. Because if I really did have 5 hours of a game like that, what I'd be going is, that's it?
Right.
But I don't know. It's like I start so many games. But I guess that's okay. That's the way of things. But one of the best ways to know what's worth buying and what's worth keeping and what's worth spending your money on was always borrowing games from friends.
Yeah. Totally.
And I know I've talked a lot about a lot of the buying games from the iTunes store and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're cheap enough that you can make some mistakes, but...
Or mostly mistakes.
And some games have, like, light versions. But for the most part, you're kind of taking a leap of faith when you buy a lot of that stuff, because there's no demos per se.
Right.
And I'll tell you one thing. I've been burned more than a couple times, and I wish I could put those games back up on the store, get back a little of what I spent.
Oh, geez. Well, I mean, we talked about it before. A lot of the prices on these games are so low that it's like less than a rental cost, and yet you own it. So like, people don't rent things anymore, which is why like Blockbuster and other companies are going out of business. So maybe that's not a very apt metaphor for the younger generation. But still, it's like it is priced below what used to be a limited time experience, except for now you can have it forever. So what's there to be gained, I suppose?
I guess. But so for iPhone games, it doesn't work very much. But what if you buy $20, $30, $40 games from downloadable content, say from Steam or for the PlayStation network?
Right.
And it just sucks. You really have no recourse because it's linked. It's linked to you,
right? Yeah.
Can I read some viewer response?
Of course.
Okay. This is from, what would you say, Cradlet?
Cradlet. Yeah. I always think Cradle It in my head, but that's not.
Cradle. Oh wow! I see. Yeah.
It's not spelled that way.
Cradelit? I don't know. Well, whatever, however it's pronounced. He writes, people hate GameStop for sucking. That's a good opening.
Oh, no.
Which is fine, but don't hate them for selling used games. The whole used games thing or evil is a load of crap, propaganda as far as I can tell. The used market supports the primary market. It isn't evil. The ability to resell your game adds direct value to anyone buying it. Take away the ability to resell and recoup some of the cost, and less people will invest the $60 on the new version. If the publishers win and get a ban on reselling your games, it's basically worthless after you beat it, right? Would you spend as much on games if you knew your collection has absolutely no monetary value at all, since you can't resell anything? Personally, I will spend 99 cents or maybe even $5 on a throwaway game, but not usually $60. The publishers want total control over the market. They've already got a monopoly on the new stuff through copyright, but as far as my somewhat limited understanding of economics goes, a free one should be better for everyone, including the publishers, unless they have some real sleazy plans for how to use that control. And then there's some parts about BioWare RPGs, which yeah. I also agree with. But I feel kind of bad, because maybe in our GameStop is Evil podcast, we led listeners astray a little bit.
Well, I don't think so. He was reacting to one of the Penny Arcade comics that we posted along with it in the show notes, which was from circa 2007, and sort of boasting how they had turned themselves into a glorified pawn shop. And that they're going to make a gajillion $1,000,000 forever and ever, until it's pointed out to them off screen, off panel, that once everything goes digital, their entire business model is going to come crashing down. Which I guess one could read that and think that what they're trying to say is that used games are evil and don't let the publishers get their money. But I mean,
and some people really do believe that.
Yeah, but he's making really good points about having used games available is good. For the publishers, because it provides a way for people to get a full experience to either buy a sequel or, heck, even the game that they played. And, you know, I'm not the kind of person who sells games myself to try and recoup any costs, because, you know, once I spend the money, I can just consider it gone. But clearly people don't think that way. I'm in a minority, because I'm a collector. I'm a hoarder. And, you know, GameStop wouldn't be in business if people thought the way I did, by and large.
I sold almost no games, probably between high school and college. I sold a lot of stuff when I got married, because I had to clear out space.
Yeah.
Because I do like video games a lot, but probably my wife would feel a little more at home if, like, the closet could belong to her and not just, like, Mario. So, right. You know, but I mean, I still hold on to a lot of games, but I'm glad people sell games, though. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad people sell games, because probably a good half, maybe more, of what I owned was purchased used.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I mean,
nearly all my retro games, because I kept very little from that period of my life, so.
Well, it costs so much money to get things brand new.
Oh yeah,
and like if everyone had to do that, instead of people buying more of that stuff, they would just be even more. I don't know. I guess prone to reading the review sites that tell them which games to buy. Essentially, it's like, you know, there's so many. There are just literally so many good games that come out, and people are like aghast when I tell them I have never played God of War, for instance.
Aghast.
But yeah, I know the entire series, or just the Battlefield games, or Modern Warfare.
Not so aghast.
Rainbow Six. You know, there are lots of really popular series out there that I've just never touched, and it just has to do with my interests. So those things being cheaper might make me more prone to buying them, or at least trying them out. But like in most of those cases, I'm just not interested, really.
Yeah.
But if you can only spend your money on new things and they always cost upwards of $60, then people's buying habits really aren't going to change, except for they're going to probably pass up good stuff because they're just never able to play it, because they can't be lent to them because of digital distribution, or because the disc can never afford it new, and it goes out of print.
Yeah. One thing I like about used games and just physical media in general is that very thing that, you know, the publishers, you know, you own it.
Right.
And regardless if the publisher stops supporting it or selling it, you own that. I think that's what's so scary about a lot of these measures they're doing to try to prevent used game sales, like having activation codes within the game.
Right.
Or like special things like if you are the first, you know, if you buy this game, it has, you know, you have access to this downloadable content. But if you bought this game used, you can buy that access for like $10-$15 more.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that. I just hate that.
Because it takes something. It takes that physical media, that ownership, out of your hands, essentially, and puts it back into theirs. And you have the same problem where you're only able to play this stuff for as long as they're willing to support it. And there's even more egregious examples where if you're connected to a game, you have to have an internet connection that's active all the time so that it can constantly talk to their servers to basically validate it every possible second that you are allowed to play this game, despite that you already paid $50 for it or whatever.
Stuff like that is pretty much the reason I've decided that I'm done with PC games.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it'll happen with consoles, too, as they're more connected, as, you know.
Well, in a way, it's kind of already happened with consoles. Can I go down my list here?
Go for it.
So the three current modern consoles are the PS3, Xbox 360, and Wii. And I'm going in that particular order because they've become more stringent as they go down that list. So I found out relatively recently, actually, that the PS3 allows you to authorize your ID on up to 5 different machines.
Yes.
So your downloadable content can be copied to it, and as long as your profile is there, and it's been shared, then that content is available for anyone on that system to play, and that's pretty cool. That's a way around the whole sharing issue, especially in the scheme where you can, you know, copy an entire disk-based game.
Yeah,
to your
hard drive. What if you have more than 5 friends?
Well, that's true. That's true. And
I know we don't know anybody like that.
No, no one. No one. So that's the least restrictive version. The Xbox 360 ties your purchases both to your live account that purchased it as well as the console to where it was downloaded. So you can go around like with your profile roaming around buying things on your friends' consoles and taking them home, but if you do that, what ends up happening is that you have to have your constant internet connection, or at least initially when you play the game, to connect to live to prove that you indeed own it, even though you're not on the console that bought it. Or if you upgrade to a new console, you have the same problem. Or get, you know.
And then there's the Nintendo Wii, which ties it to the console only, and there is no user ID at all.
Right, right. And the only
your
way...
console goes away, so does all your games.
Well, I believe Nintendo's able to fix that for you if you send it into them and you need to like to swap out. Yeah, that's the only way, though. And if you're out of warranty, you're out of $100, I believe.
I don't know. They might still do it in the case of just your content, but like you need to get a working Wii,
right?
And send it in because like there's no self option for it.
Right, right.
But 10 years from now, will that if your Wii dies, it's just gone. It's just pure gone.
Yeah. Well.
And, yeah, that makes me very sad.
The 360 is not much better because even though you can reauthorize your content once a year to solve the problem of having the dual IDs, once they stop supporting certain games or certain DLC, or if, you know, God forbid, it gets pulled off of live, then you're done. You can't reauthorize it, you're going to be connected to live the entire time you want to play any of that stuff. And I found that out the hard way. I believe I mentioned in an earlier show when I got my new 360 and had to reauthorize all my content, found out that you can't move over any original Xbox games that are stored on a hard drive. They're basically on that hard drive forever because something to do with rights management, and the copy and move functions are disabled.
Yuck.
Yeah.
Apple iTunes Store, you have an account.
Yeah.
With a password, yep. And you can have it on as many devices as you want, unlimited number.
Yep.
However, there's still not really any sharing.
True. Yeah.
Now, it was interesting. When my family got their iPad, we got it for them for Christmas. So they were staying in Japan with my brother and I at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have any, you know, they didn't have their laptop there or, you know, their iTunes password or whatever. So I just used mine. I put it on the computer and it was crazy because it like pretty much automatically downloaded all the stuff from my, you know.
Yeah.
It was great. But when they made their own account, you know, they lost it all because you could only have one.
Right.
Like main account. Although you can make multiple accounts on it.
Yeah.
But so like actually if I really would have wanted to share, I could have given them my password and they could have made their own and they could have had both of them on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's giving them my password, you know. You know, and then I don't know. I mean I totally trust my parents, but you wouldn't loan your password to a friend, right?
Right. And you wouldn't loan out your device indefinitely to them either, because if it's like your phone especially, you're going to need that with you at all times. But you can buy it for full price as a gift to somebody, and who wouldn't want to do that every time they want to lend out something?
But you know what? You shouldn't lend Famicom Dojo DVD to anybody because it's so cheap. You can just buy one for someone else.
Yeah, with promo code NoShame.
And then they have it forever because the Famicom Dojo DVD is a great way to build a lasting friendship by buying it for someone. But it's also a way to totally destroy a friendship, because if you loan it to them and then one day you want it back because it's such a good DVD, they'll be aghast that they can't watch it every minute and they're going to definitely end the friendship with you. So to avoid ending friendship and possibly a war, I think everyone should go and buy it. This is the worst commercial ever.
Oh, wow.
This is – forget everything I said. Famicom Dojo DVDs are fun. If you want to buy one, buy one. If you don't, I understand.
Yeah. You know what? Lend them to people because, I believe in the power of just showing its inherent value by letting people have as much access to it as possible.
Exactly.
And that's been a complaint that, you know, all the stuff's online. Why would I want to pay for it? And it's like, well, not all of it is online. There is exclusive stuff on there. The DVD menus themselves are an experience that are unparalleled to watching it on YouTube or Blip or wherever.
Are you really saying one of the main features of our DVD is the menus?
They're an experience. Like go to the episode menu and tell me that it's not fun as hell.
Okay, that is it is very fun. And anybody with the DVDs knows what we're talking about, but. But anyway, getting back to the lending thing, and getting a little away from the commercial. Sure. Although everyone should be buying it right now.
Right now,
getting away from that commercial. I just like to say that I hope it never gets to a point where I can't lend out games.
Well, I'm sorry
and
to say.
I also hope that there will always be a used market because I love used games.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's so many games that I missed the window of buying them new.
Yeah.
And not even old. I'm not talking just about retro games. I mean, of course, if I'm buying old Famicom, Super Famicom games, yeah, I've missed that window. But I'm not even talking about that. There's Wii games and PlayStation 3 games that are no longer in print.
Yeah, but do you want any
current
of them?
System games? You know? I want some of them.
Like, are there any like first party games that you can't get anymore?
Yes, there are.
Are there?
You can no longer buy Fire Emblem. Yes, Fire Emblem.
Really?
You can no longer buy the Metroid Prime trilogy.
Oh, that's right. I did know that.
You can no longer buy the original Wii Fit. Only Wii Fit Plus.
Oh, that I did not know.
Mind you, there's very little reason for owning the original Wii Fit over Wii Fit Plus, because Wii Fit Plus pretty much contains everything from the original.
Okay.
As well. I mean, the only thing I can think about is, like, if your religion forbids you from penguins, I don't know, or something.
Are you an anti-penguite?
Yeah, exactly. Because there's a mini game that has penguins in Wii Fit Plus that's safe in the...
in 100 years and the polar ice caps melt and there is no longer habitat for penguins, they're an extinct species, anything that shows the existence of said penguins will then be considered heretical.
Sure. But there's lots of... Nintendo is actually a fairly bad offender on that. They've brought a number of their games out of print, out of production.
Well, you know, it'll happen eventually once the console gets superseded by the newer one.
Of course. But I don't know, I don't think you can buy WarioWare new anymore. I could be wrong on that one.
Sure.
But there's a number of games that just are not being produced anymore. And of course older systems. But third-party games, tons have a very limited print run, or some of them, the company's even gone out of business since they... This generation was brutal to a lot of companies.
Yeah.
A lot of people underestimated the Wii, then overestimated the Wii, and then...
Yeah.
You know, but, I mean, that's just it. If it weren't for a used game market, if it weren't for stores that sold used games, a lot of these things would just disappear. I'll tell you the truth. If a store only sells new games, it's of very little interest to me.
Yeah. That was my complaint about going to GameStop, was that it was either current generation games or used copies of said games, and so there was very little I wanted there. There's something to be said for nostalgia, which is why Nintendo's Virtual Console on the Wii is so great. Because it's not even like Nintendo stuff. It's like all consoles of that era, almost all consoles of that era. I don't think you can get Atari games like Jaguar or whatever on there. But
you can get Commodore 64 games. That's very strange.
Oh, I love it. Like all the Sega Master System, Sega Genesis, arcade ports, like an actual true arcade ports.
You can own every single Neo Geo game for less than the cost of a Neo Geo.
Yeah, and that's attractive even if you own that stuff because in a lot of cases, just having stuff hooked up to the component cables just makes it look better on your HD sets.
Oh,
and,
definitely.
And you can't do that with the original hardware. It's just not capable.
So, I mean, in that way, that's one of the pros for digital future, but I don't know. I love going to a used game store, especially one that has retro games as well, and just looking around.
Oh man, I know. We have footage of our time in Akihabara, and when we were at Tokyo Game Show this year, and just walking around those places was awesome. I really wish I could have found Super Potato, because it apparently moved, and I didn't know where to find it until after I got home. But I mean,
overrated.
Okay, I probably wouldn't have bought anything there, but just walking around, because they have pretty much everything. There were like five different stores I had to go to along the street there to get the same experience from what I remember.
When you come here again, I'll take you to a place in Kyushu that has more stuff than Super Potato.
Ooh, I haven't been to Kyushu in like 5 years, so.
Yeah. you should go anyway. Have some shochu.
That's right. A little bit of shochu, a little bit of that's all I got. Champon. There we go.
Champon. Yeah. It's kind of like ramen with stuff.
Yeah, octopus. Other sea creatures.
Lots of vegetables. There's pork in there too.
And pork? Yeah, delicious.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't sound like it would work, but it does. It works really well.
Yes.
So, I was involved in selling used games through mail order.
Yes, I've heard of this.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't work out so well in the end because of the conversion rates and, having a family. And, because running a game store is probably something you should do mainly if you actually have time for it. And in a way that actually makes some money.
Right. Right.
You have experience working in a game store too, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I worked at Toyrific in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Say the name of that.
Toyrific.
Toyrific.
TOY*RIFFIC.
Oh, so it's like a rific place for toys.
Yes. I only worked there for a summer, but I knew lots of people who worked there before and after that time. And it was pretty cool because I got to deal with a lot of things that I never got to see when I was younger. And, you know, so this is like the dawn of the GameCube, PS2, and Xbox era. So that's when everything was finally all discs. So most of what we had at the time was cartridges, you know, like N64, Super Nintendo, NES, that kind of thing.
I bought my 3DO there.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I bought my 3DO there.
It was being an employee had its perks too, because you could borrow stuff because they encouraged everyone to know about the games they were selling. And you know, you could also, you know, buy stuff once the store owned it, because some people got in trouble for offering more than the store would. And
I'd do that.
And those people were promptly fired, and I think justifiably so, because if you're undercutting the business, then on the other hand, you got paid crap working there, and the owners were almost never around. And they didn't really do a whole lot. Like, the manager basically ran the store.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much the manager got paid, but if you were, you know, just a register jockey and actually, like, did all the work of the stocking, purchasing things, running the register, you know, depositing the money, doing the day in, day out, and only getting paid, like, barely minimum wage, it's like it makes you angry, because it's like, you know, I'm doing all this work to make this place profitable, and I can't share in any of it. So I can understand someone's attitude for wanting to do some of these things either, but I can't really defend their actions subsequently.
So what you're saying is that, you really have no interest in, having a used game store.
Well, I think it can be done better. I think if you did reward the employees for doing a good job, because it really is up to the people who are there day in, day out, interacting with the customers to make that place happen. They deserve a fairer share of the profits that place brings in. But I also think that, you know, most of the places I've been to, the ones I've worked at, I worked at Toys R Us for a while too. Occasionally being able to sell games, but that's a whole other story, I guess. If people are kind of detached, basically, they're not necessarily interested in the subject matter. They don't really know what things are worth. So that can be a problem. And they don't generate enthusiasm among the people who go in there. And I think that such a place, could be really, really cool if it focused more on, I guess, just the enthusiasm that gaming can bring to people. Letting them play stuff in the store, for instance, would be huge, I think. You know, try before you buy, because what if, you know, you maybe you'll lose a sale to someone who's like, oh, I haven't played this game in forever, but it's $20. I don't know. So, you know, you're taking a gamble. It's like, maybe they'll play it and be like, oh, this is terrible, I never want to see this again, and you lose a $20 sale. Or, you know, it's like, you think,
oh, nostalgia goggles.
Yeah, exactly. Or think you can push him. It's like, it might hook him. It might be like, okay, this is too cool not to pay $20 for. So I think that could be done.
So you do want to open a video game store.
Man, that's a lot of work. I don't want to do that myself. Doing the show is hard enough to get videos out on time. We've been good with the podcast every week, but people have been asking for more video, and we'll talk about that some point in the future.
So would you say you're game store curious?
I am definitely buy game store curious, or sell game store curious.
Buying and selling, yeah. but I mean, if you did start a game store, it would be new games, right?
Well, you know, something you mentioned about the whole GameStop thing is that they probably don't make a lot of money off the new stuff.
I suppose not.
So
you can if you're a huge place like Best Buy when you do such volume, but
Yeah. But yeah, a little home game store couldn't do that. And there's really good ones here. Like Pre-Played and Video Game Exchange are my favorites. And Video Game Exchange is, as the name suggests, dedicated solely to gaming. Whereas Pre-Played is actually mostly about DVDs and CDs, but they have a healthy retro game section there as well. And those are both local to Madison, so they're not like big chains or anything like that. I think Pre-Played is local to Madison anyway.
I picked up so many old Nintendo games at Goodwill for like 75 cents each.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Goodwill. these old cohorts of ours who go to conventions and stuff have a whole system for like scouring the Goodwills and Savers and whatnot of the area to find really, really cool stuff. I found a PlayStation, like one of the original models, with like the AV outs built into the console and all that, by going to a Goodwill. $7, pretty good deal.
I got an Intellivision 2 with an Intellivoice cartridge for $3.50.
Wow. Wow.
No games, though, and right. No cables. But like, I was able to pick up the cables pretty cheap from Radio Shack. You know, I mean, by cables, I mean like power adapter to the television. And yeah.
And that's just ways to find stuff on the cheap. If you really want to find something, you can always go to eBay. And, you know, stuff comes and goes. But eventually you probably find what you're looking for, although you're most likely going to pay close to what it's actually worth than anything else, or possibly more, especially if it's one of those rarer items.
Find out, it's very important to find out what things are worth, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's lots of places online to do that, lots of price guides. And I mean, you should, before you buy too many used games, you should have a healthy knowledge of what something should sell for.
Right.
So just because a game is really rare, it doesn't mean it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one in particular. Yeah.
There's lots of incredibly rare Famicom cartridges and things, or like Famicom Disk System games that are incredibly rare. But one of the reasons they were rare is because they didn't sell at all when they came out. Like, nobody wanted it. And so they never got second print runs or anything, or there was something wrong with them, or, you know.
Right.
Or it had very limited appeal even then. So, like, there are the occasional gems that got really limited print runs that are really great games. Panzer Dragoon Saga jumps instantly to mind.
Sure.
There's lots of niche titles and things like that. For Famicom games, Gimmick was a really good game that got a small print run. But, just because something's rare, though, doesn't always mean it's good. Like, some of the more pricey games are some of the adult-themed Famicom Disk System games. And they're horrible. Just horrible. So horrible, in fact, that even... But, like, because there'll be, like, a game like Super Sexy Hot Poker or something like that, you know? But like, the game itself is so bad that I've never been able to play long enough to see if there's anything super sexy in it. And maybe there even isn't.
I doubt that.
Because they just figure, people are going to get bored with the poker before we... So we don't have to program any of the sexy stuff. Okay, we will find a trailer for that game to link to this video.
Dear God.
And anybody who doesn't actually listen to the podcast who just reads the show notes will be so confused.
What is this? Well, speaking of the show notes, you guys, if you listen to this podcast, you should really check out the show notes. We link to them with every episode in the feed. If you're checking on iTunes, it's in there. But, you know, also on the website. So, yeah, just go there to the podcast section. Every single episode has one. And sometimes there's stuff we don't even think of until after the show is done. And we're putting things together, and we just find something really cool. So we don't reference it in the show because we didn't know about it.
Have additional audio.
Yeah. Yep. Audio bonuses. We tend to gather up a bunch of video that's related to the subject, whether directly or not.
Like that video you posted about story from North America.
Why was that? Because it was spiders? I don't remember.
Briefly the episode mentioned spiders, and I had to re-listen to the episode to see even where we mentioned spiders. And I'm like, it's a great video. I loved watching it, but I'm like, I'm like, what does this have to do with anything? But I'm glad I watched it.
I know, it's crazy. I was just reintroduced today to this Slack Circus's version of, they call it He-Man Sings, at least the original version, where they have
I have seen that.
Yeah, they have the entire original Masters of the Universe, like, you know, animation singing along to What's Going On by Three Non-Blondes. Four Non-Blondes? How many are there? There's three, right?
No, it's four.
Four. Wait, are there four of
four
them?
Four Non-Blondes.
There are four lights! Four Non-Blondes. So now that I've mentioned it, I have an excuse to link that in the show notes because it is hilarious.
All right. Anyway. Even the Masters of the Universe videos, which obviously where they ripped those clips from,
mm-hmm.
I was able to acquire at a video store, used for about $1.
Yeah.
Old tapes of the... And I don't want to see that market go away because I just really like finding things like that. When you don't have a lot of money, your only option in the new is to get something really bad.
Yeah.
But when you have $20 in your pocket, you're rich as a king when you walk into a used video game store, you know? There's more things you can buy than can't buy in the store.
It depends, though. There are some things that don't cost a lot less than new, especially if it's pretty popular.
True.
Which also means that they probably paid more to get it. But, you know, like, I know places that, you know, when I worked at Toyerific, we didn't accept, like, sports games at all because you couldn't sell them for anything.
No, of course not.
So it's like you can donate that to us, but we're not going to pay you for it, essentially.
And people did.
Yeah. Because, like, I don't want these. I just want to get rid of them.
Stocked, yeah.
So, yeah, but this is how I'm, like, going through all of Scrubs now. Because it's like, you know, people can say stuff like, oh, well, there's Hulu Plus, there's Netflix. But there's weird holes in both those services for things that you actually want to watch. And I guess, you know, like when Star Trek first came to Netflix, like there were just entire series that were missing. Like Deep Space Nine and Voyager weren't there at first or
Star
something.
Trek's on classic Star Trek is on Hulu Plus in Japan.
Interesting.
Licensing, I guess, is different by country.
Yeah. So there's that. And it's like if you want to fully utilize these services, they have to clear all these rights, and you buy something used, there's no rights to clear because it's a tangible object that, you know, by law, it can be resold.
Exactly. Well, we'll take it this way. Before this announcement of the evil GameStop getting Xenoblade, the only way you can get it was to purchase a legal... Because, like, they can block you from downloading WiiWare titles that from a different region.
Right.
But they can't block you from going to Europe, buying a copy of the game. Oh, I guess they can. They can try.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you could also buy a British console and the proper hookups and the power adapter and the... Well, I guess they stop most people, don't they? But at least if a physical copy of something exists, there's the potential that you could play it at some point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if it exists only in a digital format, you know, it's actually possible to pretty much stop people from playing a game by legal means. I don't know. What percentage of your games would you say are used?
70? Maybe?
I mean, you bought them used. I mean, I guess anything that you own is used now. Because...
No, bought used. Well, it's gone up in recent years because as I'm an adult now, I have more money. And, you know, it's like the stuff that I want to buy is largely nostalgic and you can't get new anymore. So,
yeah.
So that's how I do it. And especially the last few years, you know, doing this show has, you know, been both an excuse and an obligation to track down some of this old stuff that either I don't remember well or need to, like, have the expertise to talk about. So I never owned a Sega console except for my Dreamcast. That was my first one. And now I own just about everyone released thanks to, you know, just doing Famicom Dojo and the fact that we've started covering other systems. So I want almost every variation of everything. So I got like a Sega Master System and a Sega Master System 2. I have all three iterations of the Genesis hardware, you know, without the combo units. I don't have like a CDX yet. But I have a Model 1 CD system and I want to get a Model 2 CD system, but you know, it's like paying for that doesn't make as much sense when I have one that works already. I would love to get my hands on like a Turbo CD for the TurboGrafx 16. Those are rare, pretty rare to come by. And I have one now for the PC Engine, which is region free. So
yes,
you don't need one. But I would like one.
Want one, yeah.
Because I got to film it, so.
I'd say probably about 90% of my game purchases now are used.
Mm-hmm.
Because 50% of my game purchases already are retro stuff.
Right.
And when I do buy new games, I don't know. If it's a game I've been anticipating for a while or a publisher who really needs my sale.
Yeah.
Like, you know, some of the smaller publishers who really, you know, kind of depend on me buying things new. Yeah, I'll definitely buy them. But it's with the idea, even when I buy new, used factors into it because you just feel like you're taking, like our email said, you feel like you're taking less of a risk.
Yeah.
Because even if it's really bad, you can, if you buy it new and right away, and sell it back right away, you get more than 50% of your cost back.
Yeah, and that's something I never think of doing.
Well, in Japan, at least. I don't know about America.
But. Yeah, it's something I never think of doing personally, but that's people play that. That's how they're in the industry, and if they couldn't do that, they wouldn't be buying you because new games just cost too much. You know,
I think that's one of the reasons I won't buy an iPhone game that costs more than $10, because if it's bad, I just have bought a bad game. There's no recourse for me. I can't loan it to someone else who might like it or trade it.
Right. Or just to give it to them, anything, really.
Yeah. It's just of no value to me anymore.
Right. Right. And that seems a little strange. Like, I guess there's nothing in it for the publishers at all to let you resell something, because that's a lost sale, quote unquote, to them. And you've paid for it.
Well, yeah, but there's I mean, people who make cutting boards probably don't. I mean, you know.
Right.
Once they've sold it, someone else might give it to someone else, you know. Or, okay, that's a bad example. I should never, ever do podcasts within visual range of my kitchen. But.
Well, no, I know what you're saying. There is a point of market saturation. And
Or like a used car. You know,
yeah.
once it's done, you know, that's the end of where the publisher and the maker or anyone else should have the right to tell what you can do with that. That's why you buy it. That's, I mean, if you're renting it, yeah, definitely.
Mm. Well, that's why things like DivX were kind of ahead of their time, because it was the whole idea that you had this disc, but you couldn't play it unless you paid some other company for like each play, or if you paid for like the gold version where you got to keep the rights to the content, but you had this disc. And so it was this weird disconnect where it's like people love Netflix now and Hulu now, but there's nothing physical about it anymore. It's all digital content delivery. They're trying to get around the fact that there weren't good delivery systems in the late 90s for this kind of thing. Now that there is, you know, just transferring those bits, copying those bits essentially, because everything you do on computers and the internet is a copying operation. And it took a copyright itself a long time to catch up to that concept. But having something and being unable to use it, not having the rights to use something that was physically in your hand, was just incomprehensible. And we've gotten around that finally. But now I think we need to push towards, you know, we have all this digital rights management. We should really think of more creative ways to use those digital rights, like lending. Like, you know, I'm going to lend this to this person's account for X number of days, so they can't forget to give it back to you. You know who the primary owner is. And then as long as that person has this rights access, it's revoked for your personal use. or whatever, and maybe there's a rental cost, and then the publisher would get money off of that. These aren't difficult things to think of. You just got to think of the analogs that you would do in the physical world for the digital world, and a lot of the mechanisms I think are already in place. But you know, they might think to themselves, well, if I let someone borrow this game for $10 instead of having them buy it for $50, I'm going to lose money. And you can't think like that. I'll give you an example.
Okay, go for it.
I will not buy a new game unless I know I'm going to play it. Because new games just cost too much.
Yeah.
Like we discussed with the iPhone stuff, I have no compunction about spending like less than $10 for something I might never play.
Yeah.
Because it's very low cost, but I tend to search these things out. Like I'll go to pre-played and just scan the aisles for something, because they have just rows and rows and rows of like NES games, and I just love looking at them. And by now I've gotten a lot of the higher priced stuff that I want, but every once in a while I find something silly. Like I've actually bought more than one copy of DuckTales because I love that game and it's relatively so cheap. And I forgot that I own it. I know, I love that game, and I realized I had it already, and I got home like oh well, so I just gave it to Phil Bond, you know. That's a different thing, and I may never play that stuff, but I have it for when I might want to. And because I run, you know, because we run this show, I have more reasons to play old stuff than not. But like I might buy 4 or 5 new games in a year, and I'm an adult who has a, you know, an adult job, which, you know, pays for all kinds of things. And I, you know, if you're a kid, it's like you got to depend on your parents. So, or whoever else wants to give you money. So it's not reasonable to think that the more difficult you make it to buy secondhand stuff, the more money you're going to get, because really you look at the money you spend in like a month or a year or whatever, and you have that much money. And if I can spend, you know, $200 on the new stuff, and I have like another $100, I can buy 20 things. Then that's how I'm going to spend the next $100. I'm not going to buy 2 more new games.
I buy a lot more new stuff now than I did before, actually, because I live in Japan. So if I want U.S. games, I got to buy them from somewhere that's probably selling them new. There's not a lot of places to buy used, but the Grand Theft Auto games, when Grand Theft Auto 4 came out, you could buy the American version here because the Japanese version was still months and months away.
Mm.
I thought that was really weird, actually. But I know what you mean about wanting to physically own something, though.
Right.
Have you seen The Walking Dead yet?
No. I keep getting reminded that I should see this show because apparently, I guess the most recent season just ended, and it was like a real.
Don't tell me. I haven't seen it yet.
Well, I haven't seen it. I haven't. I don't know what happened. I just know that it was shocking, and people weren't expecting it. And
everything's shocking in that show. Oh,
and people love this show. And you know, whenever I go to the comic store, there's like a copy just sitting out that reminds me I need to watch this show. And I wouldn't be able to do that unless I could get the discs. And I guess the DVDs are available now, but what happens in the future? You know, if I couldn't go to pre-play to pick up an old copy, I might not be, and I might not ever, you know, get it at all, because it's, you know, I got plenty of things to do with my time. I'm rewatching Community right now, for crying out loud, because I just have it all already. Well, not all of it,
but that's the thing. Walking Dead is available on Hulu Japan.
Okay.
And so I can watch it anytime I want on there in very good quality, very excellent quality.
Sure.
But like, I still want the DVDs.
Right.
Or probably Blu-rays I'll probably get. But like, when this new season comes out, because one, I don't know if they'll always be available for streaming. They are now.
Right. And they it won't be. I can guarantee that. As time goes on, they will be less and less available.
And number two, when I tell people you need to watch The Walking Dead, just buy Hulu Plus. No, it's not going to work. But if you can go here. Get them back to me next week, you know? You can share it. And in that way, it might actually be good for the publishers to allow people to borrow games and things like that.
Right, because if you don't have your fans being able to chill for you, essentially, then you know, that's free advertising. That saves you money in trying to get the word out about your show. Like Wonderfalls, for instance. You told me about Wonderfalls, I believe.
Yes.
And
yes.
So it's been this chain of ambassadorship ever since. I found out about Wonderfalls, and I loved it. I got back home to the States, and I bought a copy of the DVDs. And then I started getting my friends and family to watch it. Like my parents, who love, like, J.J. Abrams, Joss Whedon shows.
Yeah.
This is Tim, how do you pronounce it?
Minter.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, this was his show, and so it was like, you know, kind of the same humor, and like they loved it, you know. And then I again showed Philip on this show, and he loved it, and he has been acting as an ambassador for it ever since. Now, granted, it was canceled by this point when the DVD came out.
Long before that. Yeah, before I found it. Yeah.
But you know, that's how this stuff spreads. Like, you know, word of mouth is very invaluable. And sure, like Hulu like shows you the last 4 new episodes of whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe like the really good examples aren't available anymore, and you need someone who has access to that to see, be like, this is the definitive episode of X series, and this will make you want to watch the show from here on out. And if you take these tools out of the people who are your fans and love this stuff enough to do this for you without any thought for themselves, then you're losing overall. You're losing sales. You're losing money. You're losing interest. You're losing mind share.
Well, there's also lots of games that don't do so well when they first come out, but they become like cult hits through used sales and things like that, you know, and then, you know, the fans get loving it enough that they are actually willing to support when a new version comes out or a sequel comes out. So I think there's a lot to be said for used games. And I really hope they never totally go away.
Yeah. I think once it becomes obvious that the physical media realm is going to start diminishing, that people will demand some version of the things that they were used to be able to meet these ends. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong. We'll see how it goes. But people listening to this podcast can share it with other people and these ideas, and maybe spread it that way. I know lots of people who have been mentioning us on Twitter of their own accord now.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know. It's fantastic. It's like people do it before while they're doing laundry, like on the weekends, or like they'll find the show and like go through most of it in like one shot. It's amazing. I didn't think that would ever happen, but we find out about it because they tell us, and you know, the podcast is free.
I couldn't stand my voice for that long.
Well, too bad you hear it every day.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, everyone, thank you very much. Yes. We already plugged the DVD this episode, so
the show
we'll just plug our comments page again. And thanks to the wonderful comment from Cradlet. Are we going with Cradlet?
Yeah, Cradlet.
Okay.
he'll correct us, I'm sure.
I'm sure, but he responds to almost every one of our podcasts. So, and his comments are always good.
Yeah. Definitely.
And you can't read these unless you check out these threads. So
that's right. That's right. So yeah, just go to the website, famicomdojo.tv. Also cross posted on Powit TV. We're on Twitter, Famicom Dojo, Facebook, Famicom Dojo. Our free iTunes storefront is a lovely place to go to get this podcast every week to sync wirelessly to your iOS 5 device.
Come for the podcast, stay for the Cradlet.
That's right.
Oh dear!
Does he want royalties now?
maybe he's not going to come anymore. But and I'll just leave with one last thought. I think I've solved this whole digital rights management thing.
Yes,
I think from now on, all game makers should release all their stuff for free, and they should go back to making money the same way game makers used to. Live shows and t-shirt sales.
Let's watch them code it live. do you have that matrix algorithm done yet? Just a second.
No.
We have to push 3 billion polygons.
Sorry, that's always the argument in the music business from live shows. But I can't probably imagine there would be anything more boring than seeing a live show of game coding. Who am I kidding? I'd watch it.
Oh, God, everybody.
Okay. Well, Again, thanks for listening, and leave us a comment. Rockin' Betty Game.